Everyone.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. After years of being an outlaw drug, policymakers and voters are beginning to change their minds about marijuana. Before Colorado and Washington State decided to make marijuana legal for both medicinal and recreational use, 20 states and the District of Columbia had legalized the substance for medical use. Even that is against federal law, though the feds have been turning a blind eye to it. But why do we need yet another drug in the pharmacological quiver? Are not pharmaceuticals enough? What does medical marijuana do for patients that other drugs do not? And how is medical marijuana different from the plant that you may have smoked in the 70s or even over the weekend? We're going to talk about that this morning with several different guests, and we're going to start with Dr. Kevin Bako, MD. He is a primary care physician in North Carolina and a medical marijuana prescriber in Hawaii and Oregon. He's on the board of directors of the North Carolina Cannabis Patients Network, and we welcome him to the program. Thank you for being here, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
We have been told that the marijuana being prescribed by doctors to treat medical conditions is not necessarily the same, nor is it ingested in the same way, as the marijuana that has historically been used for recreational use. That is true?
Well, to a certain extent, that is true. It's important to recognize that not all strains of cannabis are created equal, generally by design. As a result of the recreational use of cannabis that developed through the 60s and 70s, many strains of cannabis have been cultivated to have a very high THC. Now, there are over 60 known cannabinoids found in the plant, the two most abundant being THC and CBD, often in various concentrations, which can lead to varying effects. The THC is that notorious cannabinoid known for its psychoactive effects. In other words, people get high when they use it, and it has other medicinal effects like appetite stimulation. However, the other cannabinoids are the ones that are really getting a lot of attention in the cannabinoid research. CBD is the one that seems to offer the major healing force in the plant. It treats pain, it treats inflammation, it treats spasm, nausea, seizures, and the list goes on. And it's important to recognize that there are different ways to use cannabis as a medicine, and these different routes of delivery can also cause differing effects. So you can use it as a whole herb, or you can use it as a concentrate. You can smoke it, you can vaporize it, you can use it topically on the skin, consume it cooked or raw. And actually, it's the eating or juicing it raw that I've been most interested in, because you can maximize the CBD intake when you do that. CBD is not psychoactive. It is psychoactive in that it's a mood stabilizer, but you don't get high when you use it. When the plant is alive, it doesn't have the psychoactive THC. It's in a different, slightly different chemical form. And it's the heat and drying that degrade the THC into its psychoactive form. So the juicing it, if you juice it or eat it raw, you can maximize the CBD without the limiting effects of the THC.
So let's be clear here. If you go out and you find some marijuana and you roll it up and you smoke it, that's going to give you the high-potency THC, which will give you the high that is associated with the marijuana. But if you eat the plant, if you ingest it that way, if you get the oil out of the leaves, you're going to get this CBD substance, which is what is being used to treat epilepsy in some cases, because it calms the brain.
It does calm the brain, and that's, I want to correct slightly what you said, because, first of all, there are different strains. There are certain strains that have very high CBD and virtually no THC, and if you were to smoke those type of compounds, you wouldn't get the psychoactive effect.
So why are the CBD strains being grown to accent the CBD? For medical purposes only?
Pretty much, yeah.
And how much of that is going on, given the fact that there aren't that many states, are there, that have medical marijuana use? Well, there are 20, I guess.
Yeah, I believe there's 20 now. It is happening more and more. People are working on developing those, and I think we're only just beginning to see that. I'm aware of two of them that have very high CBD effects. There's one called Harley Sue. And there's another one called Charlotte's Web, which was popularized in the Sanjay Gupta documentary.
So now, when, and I know that you prescribe medical marijuana for use by your patients in Hawaii and Oregon. So when you are prescribing this marijuana for medical use, how do most patients ingest it?
There's a wide variety. I would say most people smoke it, although a lot more people, a lot more people eat it these days, and even more people are vaporizing, and especially once they find that they can still receive a medical benefit, and it's just easier on the lungs.
So if most people are smoking it, aren't they getting the THC as opposed to the CBD?
Sure, yeah.
And so if most people are smoking it, they're getting high, correct?
That's correct.
What conditions are you prescribing marijuana that is smoked for?
Basically, the way the law is set up is I don't so much prescribe medicine as I, because it's not legal by federal standards. The most that us physicians can do is certify a patient as being qualified to use it. And so I don't so much prescribe it as recommend them, you know, different routes of options.
Well, then let me change the question. For what conditions do you recommend that they smoke marijuana?
Well, I would say, first of all, I would leave it to the patient. I would say, what helps you? Here we find that people aren't just treating, for example, chronic pain. They're treating a whole set of symptoms. For example, chronic pain, which leads to insomnia, difficulty sleep, which can lead to their body not rejuvenating as well, which leads to more chronic pain. And people just enjoy smoking it. It helps them relax both mentally and physically. And so I try to leave it to them. One interesting case or example of a condition that people like to smoke it, although not across the board, would be something like asthma. Asthma has both an inflammatory component in the bronchi and a bronchospasmic effect, and cannabis treats both of those. Now, you may think that people with asthma have hypersensitive lungs, and that's true, so many people prefer not to smoke it in that case. But some people actually prefer to smoke it because the smoke irritating effects actually help them cough up the mucus plugs, and then at the same time it's delivering the medicine straight to the lungs, and they cough up the plugs, their bronchi dilate. So I don't necessarily recommend smoking. I don't think it's necessarily the best way, but I try to leave it to the patients.
Do you recommend taking the CBD, which is, I'm told, is an oil form of cannabis? Do you recommend that to a lot of patients, and how do they react? Because there is a suspicion out there that people who go to doctors who are willing to certify them as being suitable to use marijuana for medical purposes are really going there to get a permission slip to get high. So if the CBD doesn't get you high, how often do you prescribe that? For what conditions do you prescribe it? And are patients disappointed that you're prescribing that as opposed to the marijuana that you smoke?
Well, again, I leave it to the patient to find whatever medicine they can have. This is another one of the problems with the current development of medical marijuana in the country, is it's not necessarily easy to get the types of strains of cannabis that have a higher CBD. I pretty much always do recommend patients get a higher CBD content. At least I suggest a 1-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC, because there's more than just one. It isn't just like the one chemical does it. There seems to be a synergistic effect in these different cannabinoids. And again, there's more than just the CBD and THC.
What does marijuana provide that pharmaceuticals do not? In what situations is marijuana more effective, in your opinion, than FDA-approved drugs manufactured by big pharmaceutical companies that are inspected by the FDA?
Right. Well, that's a good question. First of all, I would say that cannabis is is repeatedly treated with a double standard, and the FDA has definitely treated it with a double standard. And you can immediately appreciate how ridiculous that double standard is once you start to compare cannabis to its conventional pharmaceutical counterparts in terms of safety, efficacy, side effects, and availability. So to answer your question, first of all, availability, you can grow the medicine yourself. That's one big thing that a lot of people like. But for example, consider an over-the-counter drug like acetaminophen or Tylenol. It's present in all kinds of pain and cold remedies, routinely recommended by pediatricians, and it's marketed as, you know, the drug hospitals use most, but it's extremely dangerous. And this is the thing. You know, it can cause liver failure and death. And most pharmaceuticals are just a very concentrated, isolated substance. And our bodies really don't deal with these kinds of substances as well as a natural medicine that has a spread of you know, chemicals that work together. Just going back to Tylenol, I was looking at this. Over 1,500 people died over the last decade from unintentional acetaminophen overdose. And that's just Tylenol. When you start getting into chemicals like hydrocodone, oxycodone, which are extremely addicting, cause all kinds of mental and physical side effects, it can lead to lethal overdose. And just pharmaceuticals in general, I read that in the year 2012, basically, what was the number? 60 people died daily. That's like one person every 24 hours. And how many have died from cannabis overdose ever is zero.
This is why on your website you say that cannabis is a very safe medicine when grown in good soil without pesticides. It is safer to use than over-the-counter drugs like aspirin and acetaminophen and prescription medications like Valium and oxycodone. That's safer than aspirin.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, talk to any physician and they'll tell you that people die from aspirin overdose on a regular basis. And it's an over-the-counter medicine. So one of the big things that patients report to me is that not only does cannabis work as well or better than a lot of medications that they would either be prescribed or could find over-the-counter, but with less side effects.
Then why haven't big pharmaceutical companies taken the active ingredients, either the THC or the CBD, and made a liquid or a pill form of cannabis that is incontrovertibly not being used for a high, that people can get over the counter or through prescription at a pharmacy, which would make all this completely legal?
Well, it's a good question. So first of all, there is a THC form called, it's a synthetic THC called Marinol. And you do get high from it because it's THC. Mm-hmm. But it's been prescribed, it's mainly prescribed for appetite disorders, but it can help with other things that THC can help with. There is also, it's not legal in this country yet, there is an herbal concentrate or extraction called Sativex, which is a one-to-one ratio of CBD and THC, and I've been told that people really don't get high from using it. It was developed in Great Britain, and it's being used for this very purpose, but again, it's not legal.
Dr. Kevin Bako, who prescribes medical marijuana, kind of, in Hawaii. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Cincinnati Insurance Companies, offering business, home, auto, and life insurance through a network of independent agents supported by local claims service. Information at CINFIN.com. Not all coverages available in all markets. Today, we're spending an hour talking with people who want to legalize medical marijuana in North Carolina. And coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, we'll hear from those opposed. That's tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. You can follow Charlotte Talks on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for news, updates, and an occasional look behind the scenes here at the show. Search for keyword Charlotte Talks. And stay with us. We're coming right back in just a moment.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Amazon and book publisher Hachette are locked in a battle over prices for ebooks, what the standoff means for book buyers, the future of publishing, and the role of Amazon.
Tune in the Diane Rehm Show coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Today, we're listening back to our conversation with proponents of medical marijuana, which originally aired in March. Tomorrow, we'll hear from those opposed to its legalization. Later in today's program, we'll hear from State Representative Kelly Alexander, who has tried to pass legislation in North Carolina to legalize the use of medical marijuana. The bill failed last year, and now Representative Alexander has filed a new version that would put the issue in front of North Carolina voters. The bill, filed with the House, would put a referendum on the ballot in November to create a constitutional amendment legalizing the cultivation and use of marijuana for medical purposes in the state. Another state representative, Pat McElraft, has introduced legislation that would specifically legalize CBD oil. That's a marijuana extract that some believe reduces seizures in children with epilepsy. We'll hear from a mother who has used CBD oil to treat her daughter's epilepsy in a short while. But first, let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Kevin Bako, MD. He's a primary care physician in North Carolina who also works in Hawaii, where he helps his patients get certified for the registration card issued by that state for the use of marijuana for medical purposes. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta has reversed his position on medical marijuana, and he has apologized to viewers for having dismissed its potential and for misleading people about its benefits. He now says that it is irresponsible to not provide the best care we can, care that often may involve marijuana. Now, he came to the table late. You obviously came to this table before he did. When and how did you come to the conclusion, as a physician, that marijuana should and could be prescribed for certain medical conditions?
Well, I've always had an interest in natural medicine. But like most physicians, I shied away from cannabinoid medicine. And I suppose it was because of the stigma against it, that somehow it was less legitimate. I was living in Hawaii, and my wife and I we had moved to Hawaii in 2009, and my wife and I had started a practice, and she suggested that we include medical cannabis registration so people could use it legally in the state. And what we saw is that became the highest demand in our practice. And we started to see success story after success story of patients using it, in some ways getting their lives back. And, you know, I have sort of an unfair advantage in that I've practiced conventional medicine, and I've also practiced cannabinoid medicine. And I've seen people recover their lives in dignity. I've seen people successfully treat their cancer. I've seen people get off addicting pain medications and function more effectively with less side effects. But I can guarantee you there are plenty of Carolinians across the age spectrum that are self-medicating with cannabis, and their physicians need to pay attention to that. Why is this happening? They need to be asking, you know, why does the adolescent with ADHD prefer cannabis to Ritalin? Why does the veteran with chronic pain or PTSD prefer cannabis to opiates or psychiatric drugs? That's really, I think it's irresponsible to just write cannabis off as drug abuse because it's been labeled with that stigma.
You are the founding physician of the Hawaii Compassionate Care Clinic, where you prescribe marijuana. There are no dispensaries for this in Hawaii. So when a patient receives a state-issued medical marijuana registration card, where do they get the drug?
That's a great question, and many of my patients are disappointed when they find that there are no dispensaries. Basically, they're left to their own devices. They have to grow it themselves, or you can appoint a caregiver who basically takes the responsibility of growing it on their property and delivering it to the patient.
In fact, on your website, you have a Q&A thing, and it says, where can I legally acquire medical marijuana once I have my state-issued card? And the answer is, that's really up to you and none of our business,
yeah.
which which makes it sound a little shady.
Well, I mean, I do that because a lot of patients start to come to us for that very question, and we actually, by law, are not allowed to assist patients in acquiring the medicine.
So you say it's safe, but we are told that the marijuana you buy today, on the street at least, is more powerful than the marijuana that people smoked in the 60s and 70s. And in fact, it's grown in conditions and using certain pesticides and other substances that may make it less safe than the marijuana that we used in the 60s. So when you say to somebody in Hawaii who comes to you for their state-issued card that this is something that you might want to try, go off and get it, and they have to go off and buy it in an alley someplace or from friends down the street, how do you ensure that what those people are taking is not more than what they need and is, in fact, safe?
Well, I mean, again, this is a great question, and part of it has to do with the law peculiar to Hawaii. There are plenty of states that have a well-regulated dispensary system, but even in those cases, whether a person's growing it for themselves or a person is, you know, going to a dispensary, there's always the potential of not knowing, you know, the quality or grade of the medicine you're getting. And, you know, it's a
plant. Do the growers know?
Not necessarily. It's a plant. I mean, it can be pretty well regulated, pretty well anticipated if you know what seeds you're working with and what the effects those plants will have. But I mean, I think we're this profession or this type of medicine, cannabinoid medicine, is really only in its infancy, and I think we're going to see more regulation happening. But I think it's very important, and I do counsel my patients to try to take care as to what source they're getting. And to grow their medicine, you know, in the most natural way. That being said, like I was saying, nobody's ever died from it.
We are going to
happen with a high THC form. And some patients complain about this as they had a really high THC, you know, like whatever a fellow patient gives them a brownie. And that patient was just completely unprepared for the amount of THC they take. It can be, you know, alarming. It can cause nausea. It can cause a person just kind of basically being out of it for a day or more while their body, you know, cleanses the THC out.
Children are being treated with marijuana. We're going to speak with a mother who relocated to Colorado so that her daughter, who suffers from epilepsy, can legally use cannabinoid oil to treat that condition. But when you mention the word child in the same sentence as marijuana, that gets a lot of people upset. Should they be?
Well, first of all, I would say that while the evidence against cannabis is rather weak, it'd be irresponsible to say with any certainty that cannabis has no long-term negative effects on childhood development. There's one study that's very interesting. It was done in Jamaica, and it found that women regularly medicating with cannabis during their pregnancy gave birth to children with higher Apgar scores and superior cognitive testing scores at age 5 to their non-medicated counterparts. And again, it's important to remove the double standard. You know, can we be certain of the long-term developmental effects of something like Ritalin or seizure medication? Those are actually dangerous drugs, which scientifically, again and again, even in the literature that got them approved, you know, can cause serious organ damage and death. And again, I'm not advocating cannabis as a safe, effective treatment option for everybody. I'm saying there's specific conditions that we want to treat. And I think that is especially important to consider when you're talking about kids.
What are those conditions, aside from epilepsy?
Well, let's see. I would say we have about, in Hawaii, we have maybe about 1,500 patients, and I have maybe about 5 children or minors. One or two of them are seizure disorder. We have one or two that have had some sort of a spinal injury, either from like a car accident or jumping off of a bridge with low water. And those are the main conditions that we typically treat kids. And then like, there's another one that was with severe pain.
And do the parents come to you specifically because they know that you will help them get the card, the state-issued card that allows them to have it in their possession for medical use, or do they come to you and become somewhat surprised that you suggest that marijuana might be the drug of choice here?
Well, usually when they come to me, they are banking on the hope that I'm going to qualify them because they know their patient or their child has a qualifying condition.
You are the medical director of the North Carolina Cannabis Patients Network. That indicates there is a network of patients in North Carolina who want to be able to use marijuana for medical purposes. Are they currently being prescribed marijuana for their conditions here, or are they simply advocating that the state allow that to happen?
Well, it's basically an advocacy group, a support group, and a political action group. It's not legal. And in fact, there are...
And what do you see as the likely...
We have members who have left Carolina because they're moving to states like, for example, talking about, you know, kids with these unremitting seizures that pharmaceuticals don't even work for. So they're actually leaving the state. Mm.
So you see this as a legitimate drug from a medical doctor's point of view, like any approved drug. Given its storied history, though, and its association with getting high and some of the movies that came out in the 1950s about marijuana and what it does to you, the gateway drug to everything else, how do you convince people of its legitimacy? I mean, after all, heroin takes away pain as well, and no one is advocating its legalization for medical use.
Right. Well, first of all, it's helpful to talk about the mechanism. We now know how cannabis affects the body. We have an endocannabinoid system. There's a reason that the cannabis works on our bodies, and it's because we have receptors for the chemicals, and they're found that the chemicals that activate those receptors are found in the cannabis plant, call them cannabinoids. But we also, there is a reason we have those receptors because we make our own form of those chemicals, which we call endocannabinoids. And what we found is that this system helps calm down the nervous system, amongst many other things, but it basically helps establish homeostasis or internal balance in the body. And above, beyond that, just deciding the safety of it, that nobody's ever died from it. It's a very safe medicine. People can grow it in their own garden, and it helps people treat their conditions with less side effects effectively.
Dr. Kevin Bako is a primary care physician in North Carolina. He also works in Hawaii, where he helps his patients get their medical marijuana registration card, which is issued by the state of Hawaii for the legal use of marijuana there. He's also a member of the board of directors for the North Carolina Cannabis Patients Network. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity.
We are obviously talking about the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes this morning with four proponents of that usage. We're going to turn our attention now to two people who are intimately aware, or two people aware of the effects of marijuana when used medically. And we begin with Elizabeth Gorman, a mother whose daughter has epilepsy, which is helped by using an oil derived from cannabis. Her husband serves in the military here in North Carolina, but she moved with her daughter to Colorado so that she could gain access to Charlotte's Web oil, which is high in the chemical CBD and made in Colorado from a plant specifically cultivated to treat people with epilepsy. Liz Gorman, thank you for joining us. I know it's a challenge because of all the care you have to give to your daughter, so thanks for the time you're giving us this morning. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Good morning.
Good morning. Your 7-year-old daughter, Maddie, has a catastrophic form of epilepsy, I'm told. She became sick at 11 months, has had to be your focus nearly 100% of the time since then. Talk about that form of epilepsy. What are we talking about here?
Well, in Maddie's case, she actually, her first catastrophic diagnosis was leukemia, something called infant ALL, and that was the diagnosis at age of 11 months. She underwent chemotherapy at Levine Children's Hospital in Charlotte, and it was 13 months into her cancer treatment that she developed epilepsy. Initially, she presented with just some strange eye movements. And we looked, and basically doctors felt that she probably had some degree of brain damage from her chemotherapy. We weren't sure what kind. And when we first went looking, I remember praying that it was epilepsy, because to me, epilepsy sounded like something that was treatable. You know, they're seizure meds, and seizure meds work, and they make seizures go away. So I at the time when we initially got the diagnosis, when she was 25 months of age, I remember thinking, well, this is something, you know, we can handle this. This isn't cancer. But here we are, we're 5 years down the road, and she's had hundreds of seizures a day since. We actually had to withdraw her chemotherapy. We quit her protocol of chemo early and took the risk that her leukemia would come back just in order to see whether or not we could get control of her epilepsy.
So, in short, you've gone through an extraordinary amount of treatment and exceedingly difficult traditional treatments to control the epilepsy with drugs that have actually slowed down her cognitive progress, your daughter's cognitive and, in some cases, physical development. How did you come to be prescribed this CBD oil as opposed to the more traditional therapies?
Well, so for us, that we made the decision to move to Colorado after my daughter had failed 14 different treatments, and she actually had a palliative brain surgery last summer that showed some initial success, but then her seizures came back with a vengeance in November. And at that point, we really didn't have any options left other than there are a few drugs that are left, but Maddie actually has a genetic predisposition to damage from certain drugs, and so some drugs are potentially more toxic for her, and then one of the other drugs has the risk of bone marrow failure, and given that my daughter already has leukemia, the last thing that we want to do is risk bone marrow failure or do anything that would mess with her bone marrow. So we came out here, and we met with in Colorado, to have it recommended for a child, you have to see multiple doctors, and they have to both agree that your child is considered a patient with a qualifying diagnosis.
Now, out there is so Colorado. Is Colorado the only state where this is available?
It is not. Colorado has it, and then California has it as well.
And you cannot get it here? You cannot get it in North Carolina?
That's correct. You cannot get it in most states.
Now, your daughter,
the 20 states.
I'm going to be pushing you a lot here because we're short on time. But she's on a very small dose, about a milligram per pound of body weight. How many times a day? Very quickly.
Four times a day.
Four times a day, and a doctor prescribed it. And the impact has been good so far.
The impact has been great.
Let me stop you there. Can I keep you through the break?
Okay.
Okay, stand by. We'll come back in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Okay.
Good morning. It's 9:40. Stay with us. We'll get back to more of this archive presentation of Charlotte Talks in just a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and the Burke Arts Council, presenting Art on the Square in historic downtown Morganton. Fine art by painters, jewelers, photographers, sculptors, woodworkers, and potters, Saturday. Details at burkearts.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, Amazon and book publisher Hachette are locked in a battle over prices for ebooks. Diane and her guests look at what the standoff means for buyers, the future of publishing, and the role of Amazon. That's The Diane Rehm Show coming up next at 10 o'clock. Recipes from the Splendid Table, tips for your vegetable garden, book suggestions, and food stories from Off the Beaten Path. You'll find all of that and more at our food blog, WFA Eats. That's at WFAEats.org. We're coming right back.
The Congressional Budget Office does a lot of the economic number crunching that we all talk about.
Our role is to be the nonpartisan source of information. And we recognize that people will pick pieces of our analysis that serve their causes and quote those pieces.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the head of the CBO, from our roadshows next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tune in Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the use of marijuana for medical purposes. We're on the air with Liz Gorman this morning, who is in California. She's the She's the founder of Hope for Children with Epilepsy, North Carolina. She moved to Colorado so that her daughter, who has suffered from epilepsy for about 5 years, the most severe form of this, she's had surgery and everything to correct it. Nothing seems to work. She moved to Colorado because she can get this CBD oil, which has had a positive effect. She was having between 10 and 100 seizures every day. How many seizures does she have on the CBD treatment?
So we were at really about 100 a day when we arrived here, and now we are somewhere between 10 and 30 on an average day.
So has the severity decreased?
Of two of the types, yes, and one type has gone away completely. She has multiple seizure types, four different types when we arrived here, only three now.
You have also noticed cognitive improvement in your daughter. You say that most seizure medications are cognitively dulling. The CBD oil seems to have the opposite effect.
Absolutely. She's learning for the first time in 5 years. She started making fine motor gains, being able to more effectively use her fingers to do things like turn the pages of a book within the very first 2 weeks of treatment.
Mm. And you say that you find it ludicrous, that those are your words, you find it ludicrous that this treatment is illegal in most of the country, but you say it isn't necessarily a miracle treatment. It works for some, not all. You're being honest about this. How then would you suggest that we move to a point where people have the opportunity to try it and where doctors have the ability to prescribe it?
I think there are a very large subset of the epilepsy population that really has failed all traditional medicine. And it's extremely important, and doctors would agree that they would love another arsenal, another weapon in their arsenal of drugs. And this is something that, although everyone claims it's only anecdotal evidence, there's a certain point at which you have enough anecdotal evidence, it's actually just evidence. There are hundreds of children here now that are being successfully treated. And so my hope is that lawmakers will see that it is a viable option, and they will consider legalizing CBD oil. And unfortunately, because of the federal law, that there's no way to ship it to North Carolina, so we'd have to grow it there. That's really the only way to get it.
Very quickly, is your organization, Hope for Children, fighting only for the legalization of CBD oil for medical use in North Carolina or for the whole plant to be legalized?
We're fighting for a whole plant that contains high CBD. So we because it is important that what Dr. Baker talked about, the fact that the cannabinoids work together. It does need to be an extract of a whole plant. So, for instance, a drug that is just a synthetic version of CBD may not have the same effect of the CBD from a whole plant. But what we are hoping to legalize is a low THC, high CBD version of a plant that can be made into this oil.
And THC is what gives the traditional user of marijuana the high. The CBD does not give you the high. Elizabeth Gorman, the founder of Hope for Children with Epilepsy in North Carolina and the mother of a daughter with epilepsy who now lives in Colorado, because that's where her daughter can get the treatment that she needs. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Perry Parks in our Spirit Square studio. He's a highly decorated retired Vietnam combat veteran who retired after 29 years of service and was later awarded disability pay for PTSD. He was also treated at Duke Pain Clinic for 2 years for back pain from ruptured discs. We'll let him tell you how marijuana for medical use came to be part of his life. And State Representative Kelly Alexander is also with us. Representing District 107, he is trying to pass legislation in North Carolina to legalize the use of medical marijuana. Thank you both for being here. Good morning. You advocate the whole plant being used in for the medical treatment purposes. Is that correct, Perry?
I do, Michael. And thank you very much for having this program. It is a badly needed in this area.
You're a Vietnam veteran. Have you struggled since that war with PTSD?
I struggled since the war with PTSD more under the Bush administration when they changed some of the policies on torture and all that. Just it brought it back up. It made it more difficult.
And have traditional therapies, whatever they are, not worked?
I was treated by psychiatrists at Fort Bragg and psychologists and other doctors. with a regime of medications, including sleeping pills, when I retired in 2003 as an officer, and someone told me that cannabis would work, I was really kind of chuckled, and I tried it, and I was shocked. I went to the first medical conference in Rhode Island, and I was fortunate to have lunch with Dr. Raphael Meshulam from Hebrew University. And he told me about his work with Israeli soldiers with traumatic brain injuries, and I was shocked. And I was even more shocked to find that the federal government owns the patent on CBD. They got it in 2003, and they got it as a neuroprotectant. Now, you may not know, but that means that if it's used in the brain, it helps to heal the brain from any kind of bleeding, strokes, traumatic brain injuries, or whatever. You have a brain surgeon, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who says, we thought it might damage the brain, now we find it helps the brain.
Sanjay Gupta is the CNN doctor, and he has reversed his position on the medical use of marijuana. He used to be against it, now he is adamantly in favor of it.
Absolutely. As a brain surgeon, he said, look, if this helps heal the brain, and this is the thing that bothers me so much, it brings me to tears. There are 260,000 diagnosed brain injuries in the veterans. 260,000. And the federal government has known for 11 years that CBD or cannabis from the whole plant could help treat this disorder. It's outrageous. It's immoral.
One of the strongest and most repeated arguments from those who oppose marijuana for medical use is the lack of data and FDA quality studies to support the safety and efficacy of the various medical uses of the plant. They say that FDA studies need to be conducted for each condition and each proposed benefit and for each way that the marijuana is ingested, whether it be the CBD oil or the whole plant through smoking or eating or vaporization, etc. Is that something that's even really possible to test all of that in our lifetimes?
It's not possible when every test you want to conduct is prohibited by the federal government because of the classification as a non-medical, class one, in the schedule of controlled substances. It has no medical value. And yet the government holds a patent on it as a brain protectant. This is just outrageous, and that is the problem, and that is what needs to be done. It's President Obama or his Eric Holder should remove cannabis from the schedule of controlled substances. That would alleviate the argument on CBD, THC, CBN, and whatever you need.
Well, in lieu of doing that, couldn't they authorize it for use for medical purposes as prescribed by a physician?
That would be more difficult. The UN Convention on Narcotics is one of the problems. But anyway, if you removed it from the controlled substances schedule, then it would be treated like alcohol and tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the potential for killing somebody, the medical people say it takes about 5 kilos of marijuana dropped from 50 feet directly onto the mouse to kill it.
You are the subject of a documentary, an Emmy Award-winning documentary, you and several other soldiers, and you accepted the award, the Emmy Award, and you told me before the program started today that everybody who was there to accept the award could have been arrested on the spot for use of marijuana. You're on this program live this morning. You are an acknowledged user of this for medical use in North Carolina. You could be arrested walking out of this studio today. Why are you public about this?
When I found out that the handful of pills I was taking, which had been ineffective, no longer were needed with this cannabis, that I no longer needed sleeping pills, I'll just ask you, if you were going blind and somebody says, hey, this will prevent blindness, but it's against the law.
I'd take it.
Yeah.
what were the effects of the traditional medications, and what are the effects of what you now take in replace of them, the marijuana that you take?
Well, the opiates are clearly, they damage so many of the body's organs. Then you have not so much the overdose. One of the first articles I read in the New York Times was veterans who were dying from the interaction of all the medications they were taking, not any single overdose, just interactions. And I was taking a handful of pills. And so the interaction is often really unknown.
And how often do you ingest marijuana, and how do you do it?
Three times a day, sometimes four. Most, you know, I try to vaporize it when I can. If I can't do that, whatever other means I need to use. Edibles don't seem to work a lot with me.
And unlike the CBD oil that Maddie is getting, this epileptic child in Colorado, the way you ingest it, you are getting a high.
If you call it high. But see, there's a misnomer here about high. The people that are eating this, the pills, the opiates, are not eating them because they're sick. They eat them because the opiates, like any other pain medication, makes you feel a little better. I wouldn't call it high. I mean, if you consider me high now, I mean, people think high of being hallucinogenic or seeing things that are not there, or it's nothing like that. So it's simply an elevated mood. You just feel better. You're
so
more relaxed.
You're in an elevated mood right now.
I am medicated.
I forgot what Steve Martin used to call it. You thought this initially. You believed this was all hooey. And now you have seen the scientific evidence. Other people have seen the scientific evidence. Why hasn't there been more movement on this if the scientific evidence is legitimate?
We started with House Bill 1380 about 5 years ago, and I testified before the Health Committee in my uniform, and I said, why am I doing this? You know, why? I'm retired. I live on a waterfall. Why don't I go down and smoke my joint and relax by the waterfall? Because I have realized that what Martin Luther King said about justice, that if you allow injustice to exist anywhere, it's a threat to justice everywhere. Whenever you realize the injustice that contributes to the whole society, not just the prohibition of marijuana, I'm talking about the harm from the drug war in general. I was for marijuana only for medical purposes because I was told by the speaker, Tom Tillis, that if I did that, I could possibly have a chance. He shot it down so quick with Paul Stamm saying, we did it to get rid of it. And so I realized, divided, you lose. And so anyone who has cannabis, freeing the plant, making it available, reducing the damage from the drug war, I'm all for it.
So that brings the legislature into the conversation, and we have a legislator with us. Representative Kelly Alexander from District 107 is here. Why are you involved in this fight to legalize medical marijuana? Because you tried 2 years ago to get a bill into the House. It died in committee, and I understand you're trying to do it again.
Yeah. If you look at the number of conditions that we have anecdotal evidence about, there are about at least 22 of them. And it ranges everything from Alzheimer's all the way down to sleep apnea. If half of that is correct, we have a substance that ought to be available, can be made available at a reasonable cost, and will alleviate a great deal of pain and suffering.
So you're talking about this as a medical treatment, correct?
Yes.
So how do you control the medical treatment or the medical use of marijuana so that we don't have people walking around here in a haze, driving cars and operating dangerous machinery when they're not completely in control of everything about them?
Well, there are at least 22 states right now that have some level of state legislation. And each one of those states has had to face the issue that you're just talking about. And I think furthest along the way right now is California and Colorado. And so there are solutions to this. The bill that I introduced last year, House Bill 84, did contain a regime that would have covered everything from growing, dispensing, to how you qualified to be able to get a card to receive the medication. And now the bill did not purport to try to solve all of the issues. Some of these other things would have to be dealt with as we modified, you know, existing laws.
We have 2 minutes left. Are we looking at other states where this is happening for advice on how to proceed?
Yes. Yeah, we are. There are at least 15 southern states, for instance, that right now are doing various things along this continuum where you've got this the low CBD oil on one end of it to complete legalization of the whole plant on the other.
You see this as a potential money landfall for North Carolina. $100 million might come into the state if we did this. I'm not sure that's a good idea to do it for the money purposes, but how would you I suppose you could grow it here because that's a tobacco thing.
Tobacco
farmers could grow it. How would you control it? If you grew it for medicinal purposes, how would you ensure that that's where the marijuana went?
Well, Colorado has a very interesting approach where they tag the plant from the time it's put in the ground all the way to the point where it's sold. And with modern computer technology, you can do that. And in Colorado, they are projecting about $130 million in tax revenue this year.
You were not successful 2 years ago. Do you think you'll be successful this go-round?
Well, one of the things that I think has changed is the media is paying much more attention to the kinds of situations that you were talking to the young lady in Colorado about, and that's helping. And I've had people within the legislature who were opposed before who've now said that their minds have been opened. They saw the Gupta program. You know, they're paying attention to other things. They're willing now to look at it in a different light.
Does this open the door to the legalization of other substances that have been criminalized in the past?
Well, the only substance that I'm familiar with that has such a wide efficacy in medical treatment is cannabis, and not these other things. We're not talking about crystal meth as a treatment.
Are you optimistic?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is it dangerous for you politically in a conservative state? Very quickly.
People in my district seem to be in favor of what I'm doing.
Kelly Alexander, State Representative Perry Parks. Earlier today, Liz Gorman, thank you for the time.